Welcome to the Packet Pushers Podcast, a show about data networking. This is where real engineers get together and we talk nerdy, okay? This is, you know this because you subscribe to Packet Pushers, you listen to all our shows, you know what we're all about. And today we've got a sponsored show with Citrix, who has never been on the show before, I don't believe. And we're going to have some conversation around load balancing and around the NetScaler product. And this show is going to be an introduction. We thought, because many people in our audience maybe they know F5, maybe they know a little bit about A10, but maybe they don't know about Citrix, we thought it would be appropriate to get into what this platform is all about, the architecture, how it works, and why you should care. And before we do all of those things, I wanted to say hello to my friend in the UK, Mr. Greg Farrow. Hi.
How's it going, buddy? Are we all good?
Hey. Yeah, it's, we're all good. Yeah. Snow's starting to melt here.
You know what? Let's just get straight into this today because you know how much I love load balancers, application delivery controllers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so then our good folks from Citrix that have joined us, Bino Gopal and Graham Melville are with us. And I'm going to ask each of them in turn to introduce themselves to the audience, starting with Bino. Would you just introduce yourself and tell folks a little bit about your background?
Sure. Thanks, Ethan, and thanks, Greg, for having us. My name is Bino Gopal. I'm a sales engineer with NetScaler. I've actually been there quite a while. It's been over 14 years, so I joined NetScaler, I guess technically when it was NetScaler in 2000, and I've been pretty much doing the sales engineer, or like as I like to call it, technical evangelist role for the company since then. Always customer focused, working with customers, and you know, evangelizing the product and basically singing its praises. I'm happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
Very good. We're glad to offer you a pulpit from which you can preach your gospel, sir.
As an evangelist. Thank you. Exactly.
Joining Bino is Graham Melville. Same thing, Graham. Would you please introduce yourself to the Packet Pushers audience?
Sure. I'm Graham Melville. I head up product marketing for the NetScaler business unit out of Citrix and been there a few years. Before that was in the wireless LAN industry. So been around technology for a while. Have a little bit of a technical background. Actually have some patents and contributed to the wireless LAN industry, but been in application delivery load balancing now for 3 years, and it's an exciting hot market.
Yeah, he goes, yeah, I'm in marketing, and yeah, I have a little bit of technical background too. I have patents and stuff. Oh, geez. Okay, yeah. Nice. Way to sneak that in. Well, yeah. Graham, why don't we start off with you, if you would. Would you kind of give us the elevator pitch about NetScaler? What is this product really all about? And then, you know, some of the architecture and, you know, why are people going to want to care about NetScaler particularly?
So that's a good question. We get asked that question a lot. You know, what separates us from the crowd? Why should you choose NetScaler? And I think when it comes down to it, it's fundamentally our design philosophy. You know, if you go back to when we first created the product, we had a couple of different paths we could take. We could either go the ASIC route, you know, which was popular in networking at the time, or we could go the more generic, you know, software route and try and, you know, put it on top of x86 architecture. And, you know, when some very smart engineers looked at that and studied Moore's Law and saw where that was going, they chose the software first kind of philosophy that we call it today. And so, you know, everything they've done has been written and designed in software, although we do have separate crypto chips. And what that gives us is it means, you know, we're fighting against ASICs. So we have to make our software work really, really well and really, really fast. And that kind of has given us an advantage going forwards, because the problem with ASICs are you write it for your basic functionality. But, you know, this market has exploded. You know, there wasn't too much to load balancers when they were first thought of. But if you think of, you know, the number of applications now compared to, you know, 10, 15 years ago when, or even longer actually, when load balancers first came up, you know, you got content sharing and blogs and wikis and mobile apps and mashups and shared calendars and, you know, social media and all sorts of things. And, you know, there's a plethora of protocols and stuff that goes with it.
It goes these days because we're now not just doing internet-based services, but it's also about APIs. So if you're developing, you know, if you're an enterprise presenting an API for your customers to consume, you need to load balance that API just like a website, because actually there's very little difference between an API and a HTTP web server, to be honest. But there are far more use cases than you can consider that most people haven't even found yet.
Yeah, 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 absolutely right. And, you know, they require more connections, they're more chatty, etc. So everything basically, you know, leads to, you know, if you've got a really good software design, then you're going to be able to accommodate and bring that stuff in very, very quickly. And that's what we did. But we didn't just stop there because, you know, we sell hardware appliances and we sell really good hardware appliances. So what makes them cool is that we've written the code with the x86 architecture in mind. So, for example, you know, the way x86 architecture is written is to have very, very fast processors but comparatively slow DRAM. And so the processor works on a local cache. Well, that's great, except that doesn't really work for the way that network traffic flows. And so NetScala has special prefetch code, for example, so that the next packet is in the processor cache while the processor is still working on the current packet it's working. And so if you look at some of the latency reports that have been done on load balancers, you see we are just, you know, way ahead of the competition. I'm talking in the order of hundreds once you start really loading these things up. So, you know, that was cool. Then came along and, you know, multiple cores in the architecture. And again, we took that, we parallelized the way a load balancer works so that we took each of those core and we have a share nothing philosophy. And so every core has its own memory, works independently, has direct access to, you know, having direct access to another core's memory is a no-no. So we really scale it out well. And so when we introduced our Ncore technology, again, we got a huge jump in performance because we put that software first and, again, blew past all the ASICs in the market. The really cool thing about the way we did that Ncore technology as well is that that set us up for our Triscale technology. So we have this thing called Triscale technology, and you know, Bino will probably take us into it a bit later, but it enables us to scale up the performance on demand. So you just change the licensing, get more performance. We can scale out in clustering. So the same way as we manage to work with the multi-cores inside the machine and have them, you know, fully independent, partitioned, and yet working as one to give you fantastic performance, we're actually able to scale that across machines. So, you know, it's kind of for all the Trekkie guys out there, it's a bit like the Borg. You bring in a new NetScaler and it gets assimilated into
So
them,
you're not just talking about HA. I'm not familiar with this feature, so let me ask a question there. You're not just talking about HA, active standby. You're talking about active concepts.
More than just active. I mean, it literally works as one unit. You know, some people have active and but really what it is where you run one application through one side of it and another application through another side of it. And it's like kind of fit rocks in different buckets and you're trying to fit them all in. But if one goes down, all the applications that were on it goes down as well. And then they kind of hot standby over to the other ones, which applications weren't affected. But if you were the poor guy that was using that application, you're screwed.
Well, this sounds more like
that's technical.
Honest to God, well, distributed computing sounds like what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yep. That it is. It's actually our clustering feature. And as Graham mentioned, just throwing in there real quick, that basically the clustering is, you can think of it as a cloud of NetScalers. Basically, if you've got all the nodes active, sharing state, sharing config, synchronizing everything. So if one NetScaler in your cloud disappears, the other ones pick up and traffic transparently flows through unaffected.
Now, that's been less of an issue for the last decade when we've been using HTTP 1.0 and 1.1, where in the web traffic, right? This is where, but I know I've had a few problems where HA, you know, dynamic failover for protocols that are long held, like SQL sessions or specific types of streaming protocols, where the failover was, you know, but for most people, if you're just load balancing web servers, if you lose a HTTP request, it doesn't matter. It'll just retry and nobody notices. It's not even, HA is not even an issue for web traffic. But in HTTP 2.0, which is coming up, this idea of sustaining the connection through failover and through transition is actually critical because the session never gets torn down and restarted.
Exactly. And a architecture like this where, you know, if you've got a distributed system like our clustering methodology where all the nodes know about all the sessions and that information is shared, is exactly perfect to address those kinds of future technologies, just like you said, like HTTP 2.0.
So the other part of the Triscale technology is kind of the reverse of the scale up, scale out, and that's the scale in. So one of the really cool things we've done as well is enabled our platforms to operate as multiple NetScalers. So you can take one of our NetScalers, you can run, you know, what, up to 80 independent NetScaler editions on it, and it's 100% CPU, memory, crypto, network resource, they're all 100% isolated. So that means you can reset, pull down, run different versions on those individual instances of NetScaler without them affecting the other. And if you get a badly behaved application or a huge spike in traffic on one of the applications, it doesn't affect the rest. We're not software partitioning. It's real hardware partitioning. And so that enables you, and you also don't get the config bloats. You know, the old problems of firewalls. You know, you, as your firewall gets older and older, the configs get bigger and bigger because everyone adds rules, but hardly anyone ever takes them out.
It might break something. I don't want to take it out.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the same with configs on a load balancer. You know, you put another application through and you think now, I mean, it's just crazy the number of applications that people are running. And, you know, some of them don't last that long. But what happens to the configs? Well, they just stay in there and get dirty the system and make them run slower. So this enables you, you know, true differences between them. And if you've got, you know, you want to take down SAP over a Slack period in the financial calendar, you know, you're not going to have to pull down Outlook at the same time when it's a busy sales time. You know, you can do real cool stuff like that. But we also do have micro containers within that. So, you know, within those instances or within a basic NetScaler, you can run up to 512 admin partitions. So you can, you know, further separate the configs. So you can support applications, you know, kind of what we call hyperscale, being able to add them very quickly, take them away, and not worrying about the dirtying of it. And I think, you know, Binu's out in the field a lot more than I am, but I think, you know, all the feedback I hear and all the ahas from customers, that's probably the biggest one that really separates us out and makes people say, you know, I got to have a NetScaler. So that's what customers are really talking about in the field. That's why they really want to move from a competitive product to our product. And, you know, they can even, because previously you had to buy lots of little load balancers to get the same
kind
of.
I'm thinking about working on a competitor's platform and you have to buy a box that has a bunch of boxes inside it. And you can only do the scaling if you've got this big hardware box that costs seven figures.
Yeah.
And, you know,
huge
you need to
chassis,
have all this.
Trying to throw blades in to get the same effect. Yeah.
And they're charging a premium price for what is really. And, you know, this approach that you're taking, I'm also seeing coming out in startups as well, where you can actually just say, I need five load balancers here. Oh, that's not enough performance. Why don't I just dynamically create some more? This concept of using software and just creating more and more instances on available compute platform, you know, wherever the power is. Now, you today in most people's data centers, you're still putting the data center at the top, you know, and you've got to route everything through it. You don't have to route everything through your load balancer if you create a network design that doesn't need to route everything through the load balancer. Just remember that, yeah?
Absolutely. And going back to our software first design, the really cool thing about that was, you know, back in 2009, we actually released our first software, and you could just buy the software. You didn't have to buy it with our hardware appliance. And it's exactly the same as our hardware appliance in terms of features, functionalities. You know, the hardware you're going to put it on isn't as tuned to operate, you know, as fast as our hardware will be. It means you can throw it up in the cloud. You can throw it into your data center. You can put it in.
Great. Don't steal my thunder here. Come on. Leave me something.
I was going to say, yeah. So, for example, there are some competitors who are hardware-centric, and they have two distinct software platforms, one that runs on hardware and one that runs on software. And the two are, at the guts of them, completely architecturally separated. And, you know, one was the software version was something that was acquired much, much later. And the old, the previous version can never be carried. It looks like the same, but it's still, you know, what is it? It's mutton dressed up as lamb, isn't it?
Yeah. And you never want to find that when you're trying to have a nice lamb. And that's exactly the point I'm going to address in a little more detail, guys, is that difference in the way we created that virtual appliance, which I think is definitely unique in the industry. And other people are starting to copy that because they realize it's definitely a competitive advantage for us.
Yeah. For sure. So let me quickly move on to the last point at the kind of high level marketing, because we keep dipping into Binu's stuff, and you know he's a big guy, and I don't want him coming around to my office and you know physically abusing me later.
I'm looking forward to getting nerdy, so I don't want to miss out on the opportunity to.
So the last point is, you know, our relationship with Cisco. You know, Cisco got out of the load balancing market. They discontinued their ACE product. You know, first of all, they just recommended NetScaler. Now they OEM the software as well as still continue to recommend our hardware. But it goes much deeper than that, because it's not just a case of, oh, they needed a load balancer. We've actually had, you know, joint roadmap development relationship with Cisco for some time now. We signed up on a 5-year contract before we bought the networking piece in, because we do other stuff with them on the server side. What it means is we've worked on some things that really make NetScaler hum when it's in a Cisco environment. And, you know, Binu's going to touch in detail, but, you know, things like the RISE protocol, you know, it's not just a case of creating CVDs and deployment guides, although we've got those as well. You know, we jointly developed the network header protocol that, you know, is going to be the heart of SDN going forwards. That was, you know, joint with our done with ourselves in CME and
right.
Cisco
Citrix
at the time.
One of the companies that was part of the VX LAN specification, yes.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff that we do with Cisco that's much deeper. And, you know, they've opened up the whole ACI infrastructure. We're there. We've been ahead of other people, but, you know, that's open to everyone. So that's not quite such a differentiator. But the way that we work with them and, you know, work ahead in the game is definitely an advantage for our customers. So those are the kind of the three things. There's the software first, the Tri-Scale technology, and just deep integration, you know, with Cisco and the whole SDN game going forwards.
So that's a pretty good start. That's given us a pretty good overview. So let's get into the good parts now of talking with Bino about some of those features. Where do you want to kick us off?
Hey, wait a minute. You're saying that my stuff wasn't good? You're going to get into the good stuff now?
Yeah, well,
that was a slap down.
That was a nice start.
We're done with the marketing stuff. Now we get into the real deal. This is what everyone wants to hear, Graham. I'm sorry.
Yes. Okay, I'll shut up.
All right. So, hey, guys. So what I wanted to start off first was just, you know, something I like to do with when I'm talking to customers who typically haven't heard the NetScaler product is talk about the sort of architecture and design in a little more detail and depth. First off, I would say maybe a little bit of history, right? So the company was founded in 98, first product in 2000. That's right when I joined. And I think this actually helps maybe set the stage for the story, which is the first product that we came out with, the NetScaler product, was literally just a TCP proxy. All it did was sit behind a load balancer and proxy TCP connections at layer 4 and offload them from the backend servers, because the guys who found the company realized that, you know, as the web was developing, one of the main areas of scalability and issue was the load on the backend servers from all those TCP connections. And to do that, what we realized we had to do, as per the fact Graham mentioned, we, you know, took that x86 architecture path, was come up with a very highly performing and scalable, you know, design. And so what they did is they wrote their own custom TCP stack from the ground up. We call it internally the packet engine. You'll actually see references in the code to PE. That's talking about the fact that the NetScaler packet engine is this, you know, very lean, mean, performance-oriented custom TCP stack that basically takes the packet in directly off the wire, processes it, and sends it back out. So it does polling on the NICs. It's a very quick architecture, no interrupts. And the concept is that we sit directly on top of there, as opposed to other systems, right? If you look at them, even though we're a PC-based architecture and we happen to have an operating system on the box, in this case, FreeBSD, which has been like that since day one, BSD is not involved in processing any packets. Let me say that again, man, to be very clear. No load balance traffic or traffic of any kind passes through BSD. When a packet comes in off the wire, it goes directly into the NetScaler packet engine and goes back out. If you do a TCP,
let me guess on that. Then you got a there's a daemon running on the box that's the packet munger, and the FreeBSD kernel, TCP, any of that, again, never sees it. It's all handled by your own stuff that, again, if I'm speculating right, runs on as a daemon on FreeBSD.
Exactly.
And that's becoming more, that's a convention now, right? So we have Linux inside of switches, but that's the forwarding is not done by Linux inside the switch. It's done by, you know, whatever it is inside the silicon inside the switch. So same concept.
Yeah, same concept. But if you look in the ADC space, right, you know, there are other systems out there, for example, that if they have Linux or BSD, that aren't architected that same way, because part of it is we decided to do this from day one. So from the ground up, we wrote our own custom code, right? Reverse engineering that now, when you've taken the other approach, is non-trivial and not easy. So, for example, in other systems, you can do your TCP dump in the OS. You'll see load balance traffic passing through. you do that on the NetScaler, you will not see anything except management traffic. So that fundamentally sets us apart, right? Again, that architecture from the beginning from how other folks are, you know, have basically been doing it. And that's what offers us the ability to perform and scale.
So your software from the ground up, you've always been software. And actually, even though we've been buying hardware for the last 10 to 15 years, what we're now learning is that actually the hardware doesn't matter because of Moore's Law, which means that faster CPUs, faster memory, faster NICs, faster networking means we don't need custom hardware anymore.
Well, I would mostly agree with that. I want to say the hardware doesn't matter because there are definitely certain things we do on the NetScaler, which I can talk about, which does take advantage of certain aspects of the hardware. Mm. But at the same time, it doesn't matter as much. And again, to what Graham said, that goes to the whole fact that if you look at it, I mean, the reason why ASICs were big back then was because people had taken the old approach. They had, you know, load balancers running on, you know, standard PC architectures on top of existing OSs, and they didn't scale. So the way they scaled was, let's do it with the ASICs. But we said there's a different, better way, and that's what we did.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
So the thing I want to, next step I want to just mention real quick, too, then, is from the scalability multi-core perspective, and to your point about, hey, how do we take advantage of some of the hardware things? When we went multi-core in 2009, we introduced our MPX hardware platform, which is what you'll see everywhere now if you look at our data sheets. Right. And that MPX multiprocessor, right, hardware, we basically took advantage of certain aspects of the Intel hardware on the NICs. And we used something called RSS, receive side scaling, to do the traffic distribution. So Graham mentioned we have the shared nothing architecture. Right. And the concept is by doing that, we get much more linear scalability in a multi-core scenario than other systems that with traditional multi-core approaches. And the concept is by doing the TCP flow distribution and, you know, maintaining all the information about the tuple that comes in, we map those TCP connections to those individual cores, which have basically little net scalers running on them. And then they can do all the processing and layer 7 and functionality. So now one huge thing that's always been an issue in the past is, say you had a NetScaler single core box. Say it does a gig of traffic per second. You're using 100% CPU to do that. You want to turn on layer 7. You want to turn on compression. You want to turn on web app firewall. You're going to have to rob Peter to pay Paul, right? You're going to have to drop your throughput, and customers would always tell us, what's our real world, you know, performance going to be? And we'd be like, well, it depends. Well, now, multi-core architecture, say you're using two or three cores to process all 10 or 100 gigs of traffic, right? All of a sudden, you have multiple cores left over for all that extra functionality. So you're no longer CPU limited for throughput. So even if we have a 100 gig box, which we do plus at the high end, you can actually push all those packets per second through the box and still turn on other features functionality because we have extra CPU left over.
When you talk about this multi-threading capability, is that all we're really getting at, multi-threading? Because you phrased it kind of differently. You said, you know, it's kind of like having a little mini packet engine running on each core.
Yep. Yeah, no, it is not simple multi-threading at all. It's a very interesting architecture, and a lot of times this is much easier with a visible diagram. But basically, imagine on each core you basically have a little NetScaler packet engine running on there, and it can process all the traffic that gets sent to it, and the flow distribution is being done at the NICs as the packets come in, and they maintain the tuple for the TCP flows. So that at that point, when that packet engine gets that stuff, it processes it, and then it sends it back out. And then all of that scales as per the number of cores you have. So if you looked at, say, a single-core NetScaler can handle 5 million connections. If you have a 8-core NetScaler box, it can handle up to 40 million connections because it's basically just scaling out, and there's no overhead because we don't have any core-to-core messaging because the cores don't have to talk to each other to process any of the traffic. It's a very scalable, very, you know, high-level multi-core architecture.
Yeah, you got to have a heck of a coordinator to deal with all those different processes, too. I mean, in other words, I don't think that's a simple thing that you guys have pulled off.
No. And I know one of our key guys who's, you know, helped code this. He's a PhD professor over at University of Santa Clara. And, I mean, he was working on this thing for 3 years. This was a massive undertaking for us from 2006 to 2009 when we first introduced multi-core in version 9 of the software. So, yeah, it was no trivial task.
Hmm. Okay. So linear scale then. But this is on, you know, this is what you've written on, you know, your hardware, the MPX platform, right?
Yep.
Okay. So how well does that translate in a virtualized version of your platform?
Ah, great question. Well, so basically the concept is, if you think about it, Grant already mentioned this too, right? So we have our code, and it's interesting you mentioned that too, because I remember when we first got word the fact we were going to come out with a virtual appliance, right? You know, I'd been with the company for a while. A lot of my coworkers had too, and we said, virtual appliance? Why would we do that? We make hardware. Well, to the point that Graham's mentioned and to the, you know, kind of point we come around to, we realized in the end that really, no, it's not about the hardware. It is about the software, right? And the fact is what we did with the VPX, right? We have the MPX for the hardware, VPX for the virtual appliance. We took that code. We just lifted it off of that, you know, BSD and PC-based architecture, and then we just plunked it down and stood it on top of a bunch of different hypervisors. So the VPX runs on VMware, ESX, you know, Zen Server, Hyper-V, KVM, all of those. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about it is because we took that same base code, it's exactly identical to the same code you runs the hardware. So if I want to upgrade my hardware box, right, and I want to download the latest NetScaler release 10.5, build, you know, 120, I want to upgrade my VPX virtual appliance, use the exact same build. That's the great thing. Since day one, we've had fundamental parity in features and everything between the virtual appliance and the hardware appliance. And the key thing there is, from a performance perspective, right, as long as you can allocate enough cores to the VPX on whatever solution you have it on, right, it can actually also deliver on performance, except in one key area. And this is something I definitely want to address with you guys, which is performance-wise, SSL. So I'm sure you guys have had customers talking about SSL and security becoming much more of a, you know, need nowadays, right?
Yes.
Yep.
It's, and well, SSL is going to becoming standard, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Up until now, 20% of our traffic has been SSL. We used to have hardware to do the asymmetric crypto exchange. It's been a hassle inside of x86s. You know, because the crypto functions aren't in the CPUs, but that's changing now in that Intel hardware starting to add crypto to certain platforms. And even in the CPUs, there's some stuff there. I mean, your Apple iPhone now has a crypto engine in it, in hardware.
Oh, exactly. And that's all being driven by the enhanced need for security and SSL. But here's what we're seeing, right? For example, if you take a look at the Citrix NetScaler data sheets and, you know, you just Google NetScaler data sheet and you look at the platforms, you'll see a lot of performance metrics. And most times when we talk to customers, performance metrics we would discuss in terms of how much traffic can you handle in gigs per second in, you know, packets or requests. But now, as I talk to customers now, that's not the main scaling factor. The main scaling factor we're seeing is in SSL performance, right? Because as more and more requirements come down from security based on all the different attacks and vulnerabilities we see from Poodle to Heartbleed to the latest, you know, hack attempt on any customer, everyone's needing secure stuff, and the SSL TPS is becoming the main scaling factor. So if you look right now on the NetScale data sheets, and not everyone has done this, we give you your SSL transactions per second in 2K key size. So for 2K certs, 2048-bit certs. And what's interesting is if you look at those performance numbers, they may seem a little low if you're used to looking at things in 1K. And that's because the performance numbers we give you for 2K, if you want to get the 1K numbers, you actually multiply those by 5. That's how much of a drop there was going from 1K to 2K.
Yeah, the key size, the bigger the key size, it's exponentially more complex to calculate the key for the asymmetric key exchange. So it's not twice as hard. It's, as you say, 5 times as hard.
Exactly. Yeah. And to be clear, right, even though we're an x86 PC-based architecture, we do have one ASIC on the box. And that one ASIC is exactly for SSL offload for the exact reason you mentioned. And back to the point I was making about the VPX, the one problem you're going to have with the VPX from a performance perspective is even if we can allocate a ton of CPUs and push all the packets we need, you're still going to have issues with offloading the SSL, even as Intel is adding, right, more and more crypto information and knowledge into their chips, it's still not even close to keeping up with what an actual SSL offload ASIC can do. As, for example, people move to ECC suites, you know, ECDHE with Diffie-Hellman, or you're trying to do even NSA Suite B or any of these advanced crypto ciphers, none of those are going to work in general purpose CPU, right? You need dedicated SSL offload hardware like we do from Cavium. We're their biggest customer, right? We have the most SSL chips in our platforms, and that's actually the key big performance metric we see for most customers nowadays.
But Intel's putting those chips into the x86 too.
They're starting to, but you know,
it's a ways out.
Yeah, it's a ways out. We're customers nowadays in the time frame they need security, because security it's all about now, right? They're going to need a solution that can scale for them now in the next few years, and obviously also the advantage of having it, and you're going to need it too. Let's be clear, even if the Intel chips could, Right. When we've had customers who've discussed, we've discussed this with, you still need some central point of inspection and, you know, security in front of your servers so that, you know, attacks don't get securely delivered to them. So there's all sorts of layers of functionality you need to do, compression of traffic, you know, web app firewall type inspection, all sorts of things you'll want to do at the front end before it even gets to the back end. So even if you have it on the back end, it's still not necessarily going to be meeting your requirements to not have it on the front.
Oh, yeah. Now, there are chipsets coming from Intel that would drive some of this. I think the Cavium chips for SSL is passing, to be fair. But, you know, look,
sure,
everything changes. There's no such thing as, you know.
If Intel comes out with those chips, it just means we just leverage it on the motherboards we put in the boxes as opposed to having to have third-party Cavium ASICs, which makes it easier for us, right?
Yeah, and it's not a big deal. Clustering, like I've been reviewing some of the documentation about here, and you talk about the clustering stuff, and I mean, I'm pretty excited about that because I didn't realize that, you know, I could just have, it says here up to 20 in a cluster or 30?
No, actually 32. And right. If I may, let me address clustering as part of the tri-scale aspect of the NetScaler that Graham talked about, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of architecture, but in this case, I believe the architecture is actually useful, right? Sometimes it has its purposes. And with Tri-Scale, we have three axes. We talk about scale up, scale in, and scale out. So to your point, let's address the scale out with clustering first, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what we've done with NetScaler, you know, product's been out for, you know, 15 years, and we've got rock-solid HA deployments in, you know, all of our customers, right? Active standby, we've kept it that way. We've had customers ask us about active-active, but as Graham's mentioned, there's a lot of complications there, and most active-active deployments are not true active-active. You're only active for certain vServers on one box and certain on the other. So we said, just like when we went
with... You can take customers where you need to be. You need to take... If you're thinking of everything in terms of active standby, and therefore active-active is the next step, you need to start thinking about, you know, active standby is the base, active-active is the middle step, and then truly clustered is actually where you want to be next.
Exactly. Mm. But what we decided to do was just go to truly clustered. Right.
Yes.
So we skipped that halfway middle step. And the concept with truly clustered is you can take a cluster of NetScalers up to 32 nodes, and they will basically act, like I like to say, as a cloud of NetScalers. So you can have N plus M clustering, N active units, M standby units, any number active. You could have all 32 active. They're all going to share the state, share the config, synchronize. You could run a single virtual server across them. And the concept is one NetScaler falls out, traffic state is synchronized, and basically all the other nodes pick up as if nothing happened and everything flows through.
Okay, so all nodes maintain flow state across the environment. Now, you had also said some could be active and some could be passive in the cluster. Is there, what's the use case for that scenario?
Well, so just like in, you know, your regular active standby scenario, right, there are some customers who basically just, you know, don't need load, you know, for say they got a 10-node cluster, they're not obviously pushing load on all of them, and they would prefer to, you know, run it on the ones that they have active and have some standby. So it's just an option that we give customers so that they know that, you know, you've only got to look at, say, 5 units out of the 10. Because when you think about it, too, remember, while this offers you great availability, you know, troubleshooting is also an important factor. And if you have 5 nodes active versus 10 nodes active, you got to look at 10 nodes versus 5. You know, there's things that you have to consider in terms of, you know, troubleshooting and other factors as opposed to just, hey, it'd be great to have traffic in all my units, right?
It could even be just difficult to get 5 or 10 units in a certain place in the network.
Yep.
You know, sometimes you actually want all 10 to be participating in something, and sometimes you only want all 5 or half of them to be participating in something. I guess.
Yeah.
I was thinking about capacity management too. If you've got half active and half passive, then you know when you're getting up there on your active members, you've still got, you know, passive members that are there that could pick up that load, as opposed to you can't have everybody be active in the cluster and run them all at 80%+. That's not going to be good as devices start falling out of the cluster.
And to be clear to that specific node, you know, or specific model you describe when you got just active-active with 2 nodes, right, that doesn't buy you anything additional in capacity because you can't oversubscribe the node at more than 50% because if one node fails, then the other's still got to pick it up. And Graham, I think you had something to say?
Just jumping back a point, I mean, particularly more so from Europe, some of the other reasons that people don't want everything turned on all at the same time sometimes is just that they want the peak capacity, but they don't want the peak power. So, you know, the whole green in data center is and power consumption becomes an issue.
Yep.
Right, as the device could be sitting there spinning, but it's not going to be drawing so much if the CPU and the drives and whatever else aren't lit up. They could be sitting there passive and conserving a few electrons.
Exactly.
Yep. So if I may, then I wanted to get back to real quick the other one of the other aspects of TriScale, which is we talked about scale out, which is the clustering. So one aspect of TriScale that I think is very cool and, you know, was unique in the industry when we introduced it. Again, folks are trying to catch up, is the scale up or pay as you grow. So with the NetScaler hardware solution, something that we introduced from day one was the fact that if you buy a NetScaler MPX, say like our MPX 11515, which is our middle range enterprise platform, you are not locked in to a certain performance metric with that box. That box actually has multiple different license levels you can upgrade it to from the 11515 all the way up to the 11542, which more than doubles its throughput, the SSL transactions per second, packets per second, connections, all the different performance metrics, because we basically let you come in at that entry level and software license key upgrade for increased performance as you need. So the concept is you don't have to say, well, I need X performance now, but I want 2X in the future, so I have to buy the 2X bigger box now. Buy the X level box now, and then as your traffic and as your site grows, you can software unlock that increased performance.
Now, do customers also do that sort of a scale up and down scenario, or should I say scale out, with the virtual appliances where they might spin up a bunch of extra ones and then spin them down as they don't need them?
Yeah, and actually, so there's a couple things going on there, right? I mean, if you look at it, it's kind of in the name. I mean, we're called NetScaler, right? So obviously that's kind of top of mind for us. So the concept we've been trying to do with the platform and the solution is give customers as much flexibility as possible. So first off, pay-as-you-grow scale up within the hardware. So you can basically upgrade and downgrade as needed. Scale out with the clustering. If you max out your box even, you can just add more boxes and scale out horizontally. And then we talked about the VPX virtual appliance, right? We give you the same ability to, for example, initially I think we were maybe talking about clustering hardware boxes. You can also cluster VPXs. So you can actually cluster virtual appliances if you want, to improve and increase performance. Plus, on top of that, there's a whole bunch of stuff that we talk about with orchestration and on-demand services within data centers and the cloud that we'll talk about in a little bit that actually directly relate to what you just described too. So what I was thinking maybe now is to try and talk a little bit about the third aspect of TriScale, which is the scale-in multi-tenancy solution with the SDX in a little more detail. Does that sound good to you guys?
Yeah,
multi-tenancy, go for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Because this is really, multi-tenancy is the one thing that I've discovered that really gets people excited in the modern era, is that if you're a cloud provider, you get excited about multi-tenancy because you can share one unit between multiple customers if there's sufficient isolation and security. But in an enterprise now, we've got these overlay networks which allow us to have isolation in the data center in the virtual space. And now I need to have my network services, load balancing firewalls, do the same thing. And that's why
exactly.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so what we see or what we've seen and found from customers is a lot of interest on this front. Because just like you said, we developed, first from the MPX hardware front, right? And then we came out with the VPX virtual appliance. But we had a lot of customers who were talking about the fact that, for example, I can use this example, a large chip manufacturer customer of mine down in San Diego, who shall remain nameless, and they basically have an IT department that services a whole bunch of different business units, right? There's actually, close to hundreds within this company. It's so big. And each of them have different applications with different requirements, different app owners, needs, and life cycles. And basically, one department is like, I don't want my application being touched by anybody else, and I don't want someone to, take it down because they need to upgrade their thing. So they ended up buying, a pair of load balancers for each of their different business units for each of the applications. And after a year of this, and this was great for us because we love the business, but they literally came back to us and said, we have like 100 pairs of your smallest end boxes. They're not actually being utilized that much. This is just ridiculous. But, they said they looked at other, solutions that were offered out there, and everybody else was doing partitioning. And the problem with partitioning is it's not true multi-tenancy, right? You still have
still shared
CPU.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's a bit like saying, these first 20 entries of this access list is a partition.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they basically hack it. They try to, you know, hack the config. They try to make it look like it's not true isolation. So we had been, you know, looking at this, and we looked at also the fact that, hey, as part of Citrix, it's a virtualization company. We've got a lot of virtualization knowledge. And so we said, okay, we've got a better way of doing this. And so what we did is we took our hardware, that MPX hardware, we wiped it, and we loaded a bunch of VPXs on it. And that's our fabric, our multi-tenant solution, the SDX platform, or service delivery, you know, platform. And the concept there is, obviously, as you can guess, just like if you got a bunch of VPXs on a, you know, ESX server, when you spin up the VPXs on the SDX, you hard allocate memory, CPU, disk space, you know, all of the factors so that these things are truly fully isolated. And each VPX can be different versions. They're completely different configs. In fact, if you're on a VPX on SDX, you have no idea that there's anybody else out there in the world except whatever you see for your VPX instance.
So does that include, right, inside the BSD management interface, it's isolated in the forwarding plane, the packet forwarding engine. It's isolated all the way through.
Yeah, so on the SDX, when you spin up those VPX instances, you can even allocate isolated down to the network ports themselves so that a VPX only can be used this specific network port and no one else can, you know, have any traffic across that one.
Right. So it's actually genuine. Yeah, it's full on.
Yep, full on isolation. Now, the thing about it, you may say, is, okay, you know, I get that, but how is that going to be different from having a VPX on my regular server host, right? So sounds like I can get the same functionality there. And that's where I say, aha, this is where some of that, you know, Intel technology hardware stuff actually makes a difference. So specifically what happens is when you're doing it on our hardware, since we control the hardware, right? The problem is you can load up a VPX and a bunch of different servers, with a bunch of different hardware and chipsets and stuff. We can't know what's out there. Right. But when we do it on our hardware, we know exactly which chipsets, processors, NICs, and everything we have. So we're leveraging Intel's virtualization technology, specifically VTX, VTD, and most importantly, SRIOV.
Which is, now, just to quickly summarize that, that's what VMware uses for isolation.
Yes.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Just to put that into perspective, this technology is available to everybody, but that's how VMware says our hosts don't need SRIOV, all those words, all those, you know, TLAs and ETLAs that you just spat out there, they're all used by everybody else. KVM, VMware, whatever. Yep.
They are, but the thing is there's specific instruction sets and calls that happen between at the hardware level, say for particular chipsets, CPUs, and other things that are not supported across all of them. So because we know which ones we have, we can actually leverage that, and specifically the SROV, to virtualize the I.O. And key thing here, bypass, in this case, we have Zen Server as the hypervisor, DOM 0, for direct access to the NICs for increased throughput and performance. So, for example, let me give you guys some details. If you look at the SDX platform, if you look at a VPX, without SRIOV, a regular VPX on a server host, right, can only do like 1 to 2 gigs of throughput per second on Zen Server. And part of that is because Zen Server, you get less throughput than, say, on ESX, because Zen Server uses the, you know, DOM 0 concept and funnels everything through there. So it's more secure by design, but it becomes more of a bottleneck, right? ESX host, you can actually get a little bit higher throughput, but you still, you know, top out around 3-4 gigs throughput, 8 maybe on the high end, depending on your host. With SRIOV bypassing the, you know, hypervisor and going directly to the hardware, we can have a VPX with enough cores allocated that can push over 20 gigs of throughput a second.
Right.
So you can see the performance is no longer an issue. But backing up, I already said that really it's not about throughput. It's about SSL, right? And the key thing we can do with SSL with our hardware platform that you can't do with a VPX on a regular server is crypto pass-through. Yeah. Right, so you can offload all the SSL and get the benefits of the SSL offload hardware on the SDX platform, so you can actually get real-world SSL performance in your multi-tenant environment.
Okay,
so
that's tricky, but that's an answer.
Yeah. And now the cool thing I think about the SDX is understanding the technology and why we created it and why we had it. We quickly realized something about the SDX that I think shows kind of like the visionary, aspect we have at Citrix here, which is we've got this virtualized network services platform. We got this SDX. It can run multiple VPX instances. But wait a sec. What's limiting it to just being VPXs? And we realized the answer to that was nothing. So we saw where things were going in, you know, the data center space, the networking side with, you know, virtualization of different adjacent network resources. And we said, hey, contact a bunch of different third-party vendors and said, you've got virtual instances of your software. How do you feel about running it on something like the SDX? And we got a positive response. So, for example, if you look, one of the key things with the SDX is we can run third-party network adjacent VMs on it. For example, Palo Alto, Blue Cat, CSC, et cetera, have VMs that you can go to our site, if you look, you know, NetScaler SDX third-party services, that you can download and put on the SDX and run on that platform.
Not that they're like tightly integrated with the load balancer or anything like that. You've just given them a hardware platform that's, you know, virtualized. It's got a hypervisor and saying, hey, you can make use of the, you know, the hardware, the great hardware that's sitting here.
Yeah, I mean, some of them, so for example, Blue Cat or CSE, that's definitely true. But on the other hand, if you think about it, for example, Palo Alto. Palo Alto is a best of breed network firewall. And if you're saying, hey, I'm going to put a network firewall on my device, that's not the same as, hey, I'm just running a VM that I could run on an ESX server. So for example, with Palo Alto, we've actually got a joint, you know, product roadmap with them and very tight integration on the support end and other things, because if you're going to deploy a, you know, network firewall type device, obviously you want to make sure that the security posture you take in your organization is, you know, very tight. So that's much more tightly integrated than, say, some of the other aspects or offerings that we have. So there is some definite differences in some of the offerings there.
And this, too, is a trend across the industry. So many vendors are offering this type of capability, and it really comes down to customers have new choices, right? So if you're listening to this and going, why would I do this? The answer is, if you're asking that question, you probably don't want to, but you've got new ways of deploying these things. So this idea of having a container inside an appliance is means you can actually start to put virtual network appliances in places where they need to be. So if you think about you're in a data center and you're not allowed to run a server – and you want to run a Blue Cat appliance, but you don't want to buy, you know, or a Palo Alto firewall, but you don't want to have to go and buy another box, you can start running them as VMs inside of a NetScaler.
SDX, right? Yeah.
Sorry.
Yep, and that's a key thing, because the exact feedback we get from customers is, oh, wow, this is great, because I can't put an ESX server in my DMZ, right? Like, security won't allow that. Like, that's not going to fly, but if instead you have a virtualized network services platform like the NetScaler, which is the same hardware as the MPX, which is a hardened network device, right? And now it has the capability to have a virtualized environment for you and have all these different network adjacent services and let you offer on-demand services where you can now orchestrate and, you know, work with the cloud, all of a sudden a whole new, you know, realm of opportunities basically open up. And the feedback we've gotten from customers, I can definitely tell you, is has been very positive in this aspect. And just like you said, Greg, this is exactly the direction we see a lot of customers. If they're not already going there, they've been told they need to go there, right?
Mm. Yeah. It's one of those things that you when you need it, you go, oh, I'm so glad I thought of that. You know, so glad I had that opportunity. Because sometimes you just don't want to go and buy an x86 server and just to run a, you know, That's why things like services modules in Cat 6500 chassis were very popular. I used to, it was so difficult for me to buy a server and put it in the data center that we actually just didn't bother most of the time. You know, this is a decade ago, but, you know, these types of features allow you to do this, to get around the limitations of the beast.
If I could address one thing, too, a lot of this is something that we're seeing based on customers and feedback because of, you know, on the networking side, the advent of SDN, right? You know, software-defined networking, because we more and more we've had customers who, you know, are asking us, what's our product roadmap? Where are we going in the future? And I think this is, you know, a key leg of where we're going, because as customer networks basically start becoming more and more, you know, flexible, and, you know, we look at what happened on the server front in terms of server virtualization, right? This is where VMware made it big. The problem is the underlying network is not as flexible, right? You know, everything's still manual and you still have to make changes, you know, just to add a, you know, a server port for on a VLAN. It's still a lot of touch points. It's still very complicated. So customers are looking at, you know, SDN type solutions, flattening out their networks. But the thing is, when we look at all the different network vendors out there, Cisco, Juniper, HP, Dell, or even folks who are trying to get into it, VMware, whomever, their expertise is still at layer 2.3, right? And we feel that there's going to be a fundamental separation between what they can offer at 2.3 and what we offer at 4.7. And if you look at, you know, obviously that what's that layer 4 through 7 sort of software defined network going to look like, it's going to look a lot like a solution like you mentioned, already like the SDX, where you have the capability of running multiple VMs, right? And the ability, and more importantly, to orchestrate all that. And one of the aspects, go ahead, yeah?
Yeah, no, I was going to say, it's not, to me, I'm less, like the use, the features and the functionalities of the appliance matters, but the thing that we haven't solved yet is the orchestration of those appliances. So I'm a big fan of the idea that I will go from having one big mountain-sized load balancers at the top of my data center, and I spend all of my life trying to route my traffic back up to them to get it through the load balancer, to running 50 virtual instances spread across the, you know, wherever they might be attached, via, you know, whatever it is, however they look, whether they're on an SDX or they're a VPX running in a virtual, whatever it is, I should be able to have 50 load balancers of varying sizes all around my network and have a tool that allows me to run them coherently as part of, you know, I'm going to deploy a server here. Is this server part of the load balancer? Yes. Which load balancer? Oh, I need a load balancer. Click button, load balancer should appear. Or it should go on to this load balancer, you know. And what rules do you want? Oh, well, here's our default template for load balancing. Just put that in. If you don't know what you want, we'll give you the default configuration. And so on and so forth, right? That's my...
Exactly. Ideal scenario. And that's exactly part of, and I want to make one interesting point here, I think, for the audience, because, I'd been with NetScaler for, you know, forever now at this point, and we got acquired by Citrix, and I remember thinking, who's Citrix and why did they buy us? And, a lot of customers out there might be kind of wondering that too, and we kind of, you know, have that.
There's a lot of acquisitions where we think that question.
Exactly. But I got to say, All things being said, at this point, looking back now, being acquired by Citrix was one of the best things that could have happened to us. First off, they were not a networking company, so they obviously didn't have any overlap in expertise. So that meant that everybody at the company was immediately valuable. And second off, being acquired by Citrix, right, that virtualization expertise and technology they brought to the table, I think has really benefited us. And you can see that in the direction the product's going in and also with the solutions. Like the SDX never would have happened if not for the Citrix acquisition, right? And I think it's actually been huge for us. And on that point, right, as we talk about orchestration in the cloud, right, so one of the things that, again, Citrix did was make an acquisition recently, cloud.com, which has become the cloud platform orchestration solution. So if you look at it, we have a built-in orchestration solution with CloudStack that will talk not just to your NetScalers, but to all your Layer 2, 3 devices using the proper API calls to, as you just said, spin up on-demand resources. We already have cookbook templates, and we work with all of your different things like Chef and Puppet, where you can basically take the NetScaler as one piece of it, the load balancing piece, where you basically want to spin up on-demand resources either within your data center or in the cloud and do bare metal provisioning of servers, of network resources, of load balancing, provision the load balancer, add them as you need to increase load, run it for some amount of time, and then as you know your requirements dwindle, say during nighttime or off-peak times, deprovision everything, bring it back down, and save you on rack space, power, and you know all your utilization. So that's all part and parcel of the story that we're doing. And in addition, right, when we talk about that, you know, cloud, which I know everyone hates that buzzword, but one of the features we've added in with the NetScaler is the ability to connect to the cloud at layer 2. So we have a feature called Cloud Bridge Connector, where you can take your NetScaler in the data center, whichever one it is, connect it up to a virtual VPX NetScaler in any cloud provider from Amazon to Azure to, you know, SoftLayer, Rackspace, whomever, and establish a layer 2 Jira tunnel wrapped in IPsec so you can extend that same network from your data center to the cloud. So if you need a Cloud Burst and vMotion VMs for those on-demand services, it's the same network, so you have minimal downtime and minimal time to spin up those resources as needed. So you can see we're very focused on that orchestration and cloud aspect as customers talk about those kinds of requirements coming down the pipe.
So, Benno, one of the things you haven't mentioned as we've been talking about all this cool stuff, there was a point that Graham made early on about integration with Nexus switches, which I know a lot of our audience runs Nexus. All the Nexus shows that we've done with Cisco have been very popular. It's just a big platform out there. Can you talk a bit about what that integration is with the Nexus platform and the RISE protocol?
Sure. Actually, there's actually a lot of integration we do with Cisco. So if I could just give, you know, a little more detail on the whole thing.
Yeah,
basically,
go for it.
Yeah, we've partnered with Cisco, obviously, because they finally realized that they can't do the ADC space right. You know, five platforms later, they're out of it, right? And as Graham mentioned, Cisco is recommending selling NetScaler. So first off, there's the, you know, the NetScaler VPX virtual appliance that Cisco actually has a version that runs on their virtual infrastructure called the 1000V. So you can download that, and that's actually fully supported by Cisco, sold by Cisco. Beyond that, in any of the Cisco virtual environments, we've integrated in with their VPath technology, which is basically their virtual services chaining technology. So you can actually have, you know, virtual Cisco switches to the NetScaler 1000Vs, and it'll actually flow all the traffic through the environment, and you don't have to worry about routes and stuff. So that's actually pretty cool. But then on the Nexus, as you already mentioned, Ethan, right, this is actually pretty cool stuff. We worked with Cisco on the Nexus 7Ks. To develop a, you know, custom interface between the 7Ks and any NetScale solution. So this works on the NetScaler MPX, VPX, or SDX. It's technology called RISE. And the concept there is, and we've got a demo of this up on our website. So if you just, you know, Google NetScaler RISE, you can actually see a video where they demonstrate this, right? You can actually go and configure on the 7K the basic IP address information of the NetScaler. It will auto-provision all the layer 2, 3 information for you, right? And more importantly, if you give it the IPs of the services that the NetScaler needs to basically, you know, load balance, i.e. the virtual servers, it will auto-PBR traffic for you in your environment. So the concept is, instead of having 40 steps to spin up a NetScaler and load balance, you know, some stuff and get all the traffic routed through properly, with the RISE protocol, we basically simplify that down to around 5 steps. And the key thing is, too, the NetScaler appears as a daughter card, kind of like back in the day when you had the CSM that, you know, sat on the 6500s and, you know, how it would appear as a line card. So similar kind of tight integration there.
Okay, so by auto PBR, what you're saying is policy-based routing and for hosts, you know, inbound IP traffic that needs to actually hit the NetScaler because it's presumably like a virtual IP, something like that, auto PBR policy will be created that steers traffic into the NetScaler. And you don't have to worry about writing those PBR rules. It's just taken care of via RISE and the integration between Cisco and Nexus via RISE.
Correct. Exactly. Yep. That's exactly how it works.
I shuddered a little bit when you said PBR, I got to admit, but if it's been automated, that is certainly an improvement.
And we did too, but when they explained that auto, key auto prefix in front of it, we said, okay, now that's super cool. And customers really love that idea because, again, it removes the need for, I mean, honestly, like I've been doing this for a while, right? And honestly, one of the biggest challenges in most environments and most installs we get is just getting traffic to flow properly in the beginning. Once we figure out the layer 2, 3 stuff, all the services and the load balancing, all that stuff is pretty gravy. But getting traffic to flow properly in the environment is always such a challenge. If we can do things like auto PBR from the switch, that's like a win-win right there.
Yeah, because then you can just go into the switch and say, take traffic that matches this and send it up there. And if it's inside of this context or that context, or if it matches this ACL or that, you're not trying to use WCCP, which hasn't actually been a huge success.
I heard a bigger shutter for WCCP than I did for PBR.
Correct.
I can remember way back in 2007, 2008, and I was so excited about go back even further, 2002, 2001, when WCCP, I thought, this is going to be awesome, no more PBR.
Then your CPU went up really high in your 6500, and you said, wait, what happened? Yeah. Oh, it doesn't do GRE in hardware, you silly. Yeah.
Exactly. If you got the right WCCP group too, by the way, and didn't get that wrong. So
so much, and you get really excited about these things, and then the implementation really blows, and you go, "Oh, you know."
You won't have that problem with us, I guarantee it. Yeah. There you go.
The other cool thing, just to add on what Bino said there, is if you look back last month at Cisco Live Milan, they also announced that RISE is now supported on the 5K and 6K.
So you got support for this on 5K, 6K, and 7K now, which would be the propensity of what Nexus platforms are out there.
Yep.
Pretty good. Well, guys, that's probably a good place for us to wrap up this this podcast. So why don't we go around the table one more time? And if you would, Binno and Graham, just tell folks a bit about how they can follow you on the internet. And if you want to plug a link on Citrix where folks can find more information, that'd be great. And let's start with you, Graham.
Yeah. So, I mean, best place to find stuff from us. And we'll actually put up some follow-up links and papers just to make it easy to follow what we've talked about here is if you go to netscaler.com, that kind of gets you straight to the NetScaler page on the Citrix website. And if you go to What's New, we'll put up a packet pushers tile there and you can find everything you need to that's related to this podcast.
That's great. And in the show notes for this show, we will do the same thing with those show links. That'll be fabulous. Now, do you tweet or blog or anything like that, Graham?
Well, I do. Yeah, gmelville80 is my Twitter handle. So, yeah, you can jump on that as well.
Yeah, very good. And Binno, same question.
First off, thanks so much, guys, for your time. Really appreciate it. And if you want to follow me, I tweet mostly about food and whiskey, but sometimes occasionally about NetScaler.
you just got 1,000 new followers.
Well, it's funny because actually I've run out of work cards, so I don't hand those out anymore. I actually hand out my LA Scotch Club cards basically to customers, and I find those gather a lot more interest than any of my work cards ever do. So you can find me on Twitter at Keltrain, K-E-L-T-R-A-I-N-E. So feel free to tweet me about anything, food, whiskey, or NetScaler related. Those are just three of my passions. And one last thing I would say, actually, I just did a one-week distillery tour where I hit 14 distilleries with a bunch of other diehard Scotch heads, and I'm actually going back this May for Fijil, the Scottish Poetry and Whiskey Festival on Islay. So, yeah, you can see I'm a pretty big fan.
So is that you're going back because you can't remember anything about the first visit having hit 14 of them?
Yep. So I
Scottish Poetry and Whiskey. So, Graham, I can remember living in the whiskey area of, like, I lived in Blair Athol for nearly a year and hooked all around that area there. And I can tell you that Scottish poetry and whiskey is.
Well, but see, Greg, the reason that you do whiskey while you do the poetry is so you don't really remember the poetry, right? So I think that's the whole connection between the two there. But the other thing I should say is for actual Twitter, we have at NetScaler Rocks or at NetScaler if people want to follow those. And the last thing I'd say is if anyone's interested in NetScaler, the great part about the VPX, go to our website, citrix.com, try NetScaler for free, download a 90-day platinum eval NetScaler, fully licensed for a gig of throughput. Play with it, set it up, contact us if you have any questions, but you get full capability to test and see the NetScaler functionality, same as you'd have in production. So I love telling customers to do that, and a lot of times they do that in the middle of my presentation and start asking me questions by the end. So that's what I would recommend for folks to check out.
Very good. And Greg, how can folks follow you on the internet?
Yeah, people can follow me on my blog at etherealmind.com and on the Twitters is at etherealmind. And, you know, today we didn't take a lot of time to talk about, there's a whole bunch of features inside of the NetScaler code which are actually quite unique. I did a bit of a review of them before we did this show as part of the prep. And, you know, just very, very roughly say, everything that I've used on other people's platforms, NetScaler has all that. We just chose not to talk about that in this show, and we're hoping that Citrix will come back later in the year, and we'll start talking about, you know, features that you want. So if you've got any questions around specific features or what's exciting in the NetScaler platform, contact us, email us to packetpushers@gmail.com or leave a comment on the show, and we'll make sure Citrix reaches out to you or that we add it into the next show.
Awesome.
Very good. And I am Ethan Banks at EC Banks on Twitter. You can follow me on my blog at ethancbanks.com. And this has been the Packet Pushers podcast. We thank Citrix once again for sponsoring the show today. You can follow the Packet Pushers on Twitter at Packet Pushers or visit our hub site, packetpushers.net. And as Greg said, packetpushers@gmail.com will get to our mailbox and we read and respond to pretty much all of our mail. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.